everyone. What's going on? This is the Noah Gillian Show, and I, of course, am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 10th of October, 2022, and we are here on today's episode. Going to be talking about the Philadelphia Phillies sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals out of the wild card round of the National League playoffs. Before we get into the show, though, please hit that subscribe button if you're following us on YouTube. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please follow, like, subscribe, leave a review there. If you're looking for us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at Noah Gillian Show, and you can find myself at Noah Gillian. If you're looking for us on Instagram, you can find us at The Noah Gillian Show and myself at Noah Gill 1. So without further ado, let's get right into it. All right, everybody, we are going to finally be getting into some reaction about the Philadelphia Phillies sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals out of the playoffs in the wild card round. It is October and the Phillies are still playing baseball. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing indeed. And it was a crazy series. Absolutely gut-wrenching game in the first game, and then a little bit more of a comfortable dub in the second game, depending on how you look at it. So we're going to go through each one of the games from the series and then break down a little bit of the divisional series matchup against the Atlanta Braves, which is who the Phillies will be seeing next. So let's get into game number one. All right, so game one was very, very unique in a plethora of ways. I mean, most of the game, it was absolutely terrible. It was a 0-0 game for a majority of it. And then once the sixth inning came around, the Cardinals took the lead on a Juan Yepez two-run homer. Jose Alvarado came in for Zach Wheeler at that point of the game and gave up a two-run home run, served it up on the first pitch to Juan Yepez. So it was a little bit of a uncharacteristic move from Alvarado, especially since he's gotten back from AAA. He's been one of the most dominant relievers in the game of baseball, bar none. So he's, you know, rarely given up homers, and it's been over a month since he's given up a home run. So the fact that he came in, first pitch he throws to Yepez, two-run tank, it was a little bit of a, you know, felt like a gut punch. It knocked me down to the mat as a Phillies fan, I'm not even going to lie. And, you know, especially with how anemic the offense was looking the entire game, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't looking that good as Phillies fans. But then that ninth inning happened. This ninth inning will go down in Phillies lore, regardless of what they do for the rest of the playoffs. The Phillies ended up scoring 6 runs in the ninth inning to go up 6-2. They ended up giving back 1 in the bottom of the ninth, but ended up winning by a final score of 6-3. So a couple points from that ninth inning. It was unreal. This stat's courtesy of Jason Stark on The Athletic. He puts out a wild and wacky baseball all the time. He puts out articles throughout the year, and he even mentioned it in the article. He said, what happened in that game, I had to go out and check that out. Former Phillies writer, I believe he's got good connections with Philly. He's always on the radio in Philadelphia, so Jason Stark definitely knows what he's talking about, especially when it comes to the Phillies. He put on his article, the Phillies were the 10th team ever to score 6 runs in the ninth inning of a postseason baseball game. Every single postseason baseball game there has ever been, only 10 teams have ever scored 6 runs in the ninth inning, as the Phillies did in their matchup on Friday. But that's not it. They were the first team ever to score 6 runs in the ninth inning while entering the ninth inning trailing that ball game. The Phillies were down 2-0 and were trailing in the ninth inning, obviously, and they were the first team ever to score 6 runs in the ninth. They were also the first team ever to score 6 runs in the ninth inning while posting 0 throughout the previous 8. So they were getting shut out the entire game and put up that 6 spot. Just to give you some historical context on how crazy that inning was, there you go. It was the first time ever something like that has happened. And of course, it had to be Mean Gene the Fighting Machine to give us those go-ahead runs. Gene Segura played 1,328 regular season games before appearing in a postseason game. That was the most among any active players in the league. And of course, it was Gene who delivered the tying and go-ahead runs for the Phillies in that ninth inning. It was a crazy inning. I mean, Phils go into that inning you know, down 2-0. They were looking so anemic. And then one of the game's best closers, Ryan Helsley, comes in to shut the door. This is a guy who recorded the fastest pitch of any pitcher this year at 104 miles per hour. Yeah, 104 miles per hour, which is ridiculous. And he also has a wipeout slider and a nasty curve to boot. So he comes in, and it was crazy. I mean, he absolutely lost it. JT got a little flare out into left field. He was doing so good with that this year. Just a little flare out to left. And then Bryce Harper goes down. He's down 2-2 in the count. He's down 1-2 in the count. Really looks in between. The whole day just hasn't looked right. And Helsley sails 2 fastballs right out to the right side of the plate and then spins a curveball inside. Bryce takes his base. And from there, it really started to unravel. Totally started to unravel from there. Castellanos, I believe, was the next batter up. He's got a 3-1 count. This guy has chased about the 5th most pitches outside the strike zone. Sliders low and away. He's number 5 in terms of most pitches chased outside the strike zone. He lays off a 3-1 slider. Takes his base. So that's 2 walks and a single given up by Helsley. Alec Bohm comes up to the plate. Gets plunked right on the shoulder. Take your base. Oh yeah, the bases are full. JT comes around to score 2-1. And then it just all snowballed from there. Gene Segura comes up with the bases juiced. Slider low and away. Way off the plate. A ball should not have swung at that pitch. But that's what Mean Gene, the fighting machine, does. He puts the ball in play. He puts the bat on ball. Finds the hole. That ball had eyes. Got right by the second baseman. Bryce Castellanos comes around to score. The Phils have the lead 3-2. But they were not done. Bryson Stott rips a ball to Paul Goldschmidt, who dives, has to make the dive to get it. And instead of tapping first base to get the out or try to turn two in that situation, goes home. And Edmundo Sosa from the St. Louis Cardinals as well. I don't know how many people picked up on that. Phillies traded for this guy, Edmundo Sosa, from the St. Louis Cardinals this year for a reliever, Jojo Romero, who hasn't really even appeared for St. Louis much at all this year. So they pinch run Edmundo Sosa for Alec Bohm. This is a guy in Sosa who's got 97th percentile sprint speed. So they put him in at third, grounder to first base. Edmundo beats the throw from first base to home, slides in, run scores, everybody's safe, 2-1. And then from there, Brandon Marsh hits a little chopper over to Nolan Arenado. Mind you, 4-time platinum glove winning Nolan Arenado. That means everyone, you know, they win gold gloves, right? Everyone knows about the gold glove. It means you're the best defender at your position, or you're the best defender that meets certain criteria that they look for that at that position, regardless. So you got it for all 9 positions. Well, what the platinum glove is that's the best defender regardless of position. Nolan Arenado has 4 of those platinum gloves. And Brandon Marsh hits a little chopper to him. 2 hops, airmails on one. Gene Sort is a little dribbler into left field. Gene Segura comes around, scores the 5th run. Kyle Schwarber hits a sacrifice fly to bring Stott around. Boom, 6 runs. And all, like, no homers, no doubles, no really hard hit balls at all. I believe I saw the hardest hit ball that the Phillies hit was 88 miles per hour, which I believe was Bryson Stott's grounder. It may even have been Schwarber's sack fly, but that just shows you postseason baseball comes around, you dink and dunk, you put the bat, you have good at bats, you put the ball in play, and good things can happen. Eflin comes in to nail it down in the 9th, gave up a run, a couple hits, but it was just too much of a deficit for them to get over. So fantastic win. Wheeler was absolutely dominant in that. Goes 6 1/3, only gave up 2 hits, 1 walk, and 4 Ks through 96 pitches. So it was good to see that there wasn't much ill effect from his forearm injury that he was struggling with a little bit in August and September. So it was good to see him bounce back. His velo was up. I mean, he was pumping 98-99. Part of that might have been the adrenaline of his first postseason start ever. Regardless, dominated. So overall, game one was a terrible game until it wasn't. So it was an awesome game for the Phils, and it really allowed them to play so much more free, I think, in the second game. I talked about this a little bit when I talked about after the Phils clinched against the Astros with that Schwarber home run first pitch of the game, just taking the weight off of the whole team. And I think that win, it just gave the Phils so much confidence going into game two. And we'll get to game two right now as we kind of move into that. So game two was, it was a great game start to finish for the Phils. The first inning was pretty quiet, and then Bryce Boom. Second inning, first pitch of the inning. Michaelis hangs a curve. The Cardinals pitcher, Miles Michaelis, hangs a curve run. Curveball. Bryce absolutely cranks it. There is nothing quite like it as a Phillies fan when Bryce Harper just gets a hold of one. I mean, you know it. He got every stitch of that and just leaned back and looked at it for a little. I was like, lean back, Bryce. Okay, on it. But then 4:30 into right field, just an absolute tank job. And that just, I think, got everybody going in the ballgame. And one run turned out to be all the Phillies would need in this one. We ended up winning by a final score of 2-0. I believe Kyle Schwarber had another sacrifice fly, so there go your two runs right there. Philly should have scored a lot more. Meanwhile, after after JT single, or he walked, and then I believe this was Bryce's next at bat. I believe it was like in the sixth inning. Bryce rips a single up the middle. JT goes to third. Goes first to third on a ball to center field. The center fielder throws it to third, so Bryce thinks he can take second. Arenado catches the ball at third, throws back to second, ends up getting Bryce. The replay, the Phillies ended up challenging it. The replay looked like he was safe. That's just my opinion. However, he wasn't. So they called him out. They ended up walking Alec Bohm, and then Marsh grounded into two, or whatever the case may be. Or it was two out. We didn't score from then on out. So we ended up only winning 2-0. But another fantastic pitching performance from everybody. Aaron Nola was absolutely masterful. He's pitched his two best starts he may have ever pitched in a Phillies uniform have came in this past week, which is just crazy to think about. I mean, he's had a couple starts. I believe one this year where he went 9 innings, shut out the Cardinals, or it might have been last year. His first ever complete game, 9-inning shutout. He's had multiple games where he's just looked absolutely dominant. But these two games, the one in Houston where he had 6 perfect innings, and then this one where he absolutely dazzled. He went 6 2/3, had 4 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. He threw 101 pitches. I was a little upset that they took him out, that Tomper took him out in the 6th inning. But after going over some of the numbers, Yadier Molina was up, so I was confused why they were bringing in a lefty versus a righty hitter. He should have just kept Nola in. He was dealing, yada, yada, yada. But Yadi really struggled with velocity this year, and if there's one thing that Alvarado does not lack, it's velocity. So I think it was a good call by Tomper after reviewing it a little bit more. And then, of course, he got Molina out. So it was a great call in hindsight by Tomper. So just an overall phenomenal game. Let's talk about Alec Bohm for a few minutes, because this kid has made so many strides this year, and it's finally starting to look good from the player development staff of the Philadelphia Phillies. The one thing they have consistently struggled to do is produce homegrown talent. They've been hitting on free agents. You talk about Bryce Harper, talk about Zach Wheeler, talk about JT Realmuto. You talk about these guys that Kyle Schwarber, 46 home runs, lead the National League. You are hitting on your free agent signings. There's no question about that. You're also starting to get some homegrown pitchers like Aaron Nola starting to look good. Zach Eflin starting to, you know, really come into his own. Ranger Suarez. On top of Zach Wheeler, Sir Anthony Dominguez in the bullpen. So you got some of these guys that you're developing on the pitching side, but there really hasn't been any hitters. And this year, Alec Bohm has been the poster boy for the revamped farm system, the revamped player development staff, and it's been great. I mean, he started the year saying, I effing hate this place on national TV. He comes on the post game after that. He's like, yeah, I said it. You know, I meant what I said, but I don't really hate, like, you know, I love Philadelphia. Like, I love playing for the teams and all that stuff. The next day he comes up in a pinch hitting appearance, the city of Philadelphia and CBP give him a standing ovation. I mean, from that moment on, I think his conf, like, it just, all the weight fell off his shoulders, because let's not forget, let's go back in time. Let's not rewrite history. In the spring, Bohm was on the trade block, right? And I'll preface all this by saying Bohm's probably not a fantastic, like, in the grand scheme of the whole MLB, he's probably not like an elite player by any means, but that doesn't mean anything, right? So let's go back to the spring. He was on the trade block. You know, Bryson Stott was killing it in the spring, looking like our next young stud. He was the new flavor of the month for everything. We had Didi Gregorius at shortstop, who Girardi was saying was going to be our starter, yada, yada, yada. We're like, wait, we have to get Bryson Stott in the lineup. He's got to play third. Bohm's not producing. Spring training was stinking. His defense was stinking. And after that moment against the Mets, after he came, got the standing ovation, just incrementally just got better and better and better and better, put together better at bats. And I think his defense got so much better. I believe I heard a stat. He had posted a minus 17 defensive run save. Just an absolute abysmal number from a defensive perspective. But in the playoffs, in this series, let's call a spade a spade. He outplayed Nolan Arenado on both sides of the field. Nolan Arenado is arguably the MVP in the National League this year. Four-time Platinum Glove winner. And what did Nolan Arenado do? Granted, we're already down. The Phils were down 4, or the Cardinals were down 4-2, but two runs isn't a lot, right? Whiffs on a ball. Allows a run to score. Schwarber hits the sack fly. Pretty much allows two runs right there to score with that whiff. What does Boehm do? Snag a ball down the line by Arenado nonetheless. Saves that. Turns a couple double plays. Another liner by Yadier Molina, which is probably a double down the line. Gets there. Like, he made every single play he had to make. And on top of that, his bat was on fire. He had two doubles. One of them he came around to score. And just was like, he just killed it. He had a phenomenal series. And he's starting to really come into his own, I think. I think this year was so big for him that maybe next year he can start to hopefully build some momentum and this can snowball into a bigger season next year. So hopefully with the bat, hopefully a little bit more power comes out of that bat. But I think he's proved this year that his defense is serviceable at third, that they don't have to go out and get a third baseman because he can play there. And his bat is good enough where he will consistently get on base. He's going to consistently hit the ball hard, even if he doesn't hit for power. And that's really all you can ask for. Granted, there's a lot better players at third base than Alec Boehm, but when you're spending your money so many other places, when you're giving $79 million to Kyle Schwarber, when you're giving $100 million to Nick Castellanos, when you're giving $300 million to Bryce Harper, when, you know, you're giving all these guys money, when you're giving $150 million to JT Realmuto, you need guys like that to be that guy. So I have nothing but good things to say about Alec Boehm. He absolutely has killed it this series. He's going to be another big part of it if they continue to go throughout the playoffs, and just another phenomenal thing. But one more note to wrap up game two, I will say, Sir Anthony Dominguez has just been absolutely pooped on by all these national writers who haven't watched the Phillies all year, all these game and analysts that have been predicting these series, like, Phillies bullpen isn't really good, you know, they have two guys they can trust in Eflin and Alvarado, you know, their other guys and David Robertson and Sir Anthony Dominguez have really, really struggled. They're not really looking that good. Baloney. Sir Anthony Dominguez is like, yeah, sure, I'll come in the eighth inning. I'll punch Goldschmidt out. Yeah, give me Arenado next. I'll punch him up. Back-to-back K's to end the inning. Two men on. Let's not surmise. Bottom of the eighth inning, two men on. Goldie comes up, one out. Punchy. Second guy, Arenado comes up, two men on. Punchy. Like, thank you, Sir Anthony. Thank you for just shutting these guys up, because at their best, he is our best reliever. There's no, his stuff, 100 on the gun with the four-seamer, 92 with the slider, 90 with the changeup. He's also got a two-seamer that runs at 98. Like, this guy's stuff is absolutely ridiculous. And I know Alvarado's been pitching good. David Robertson has the track record. Eflin is finally healthy. But Sir Anthony has the best stuff of any of our closers or any of our bullpen arms. So the fact that he came in, I'm praying that just gave him a confidence boost, and that just like, hey, you know what? I can be here. I'm healthy and I can shove. And that's what he did. He absolutely shoved in that inning. So I just wanted to give him some praise because he absolutely killed it. David Robertson looked pretty good, came in and got some Ks, got some outs. Eflin secured the save in game two, and him blossoming into our closer is a little, I didn't see that arc coming, but you know what he is? He fills up the strike zone. He's going to make the other team beat him, but his stuff is so good where in an inning, you might not be able to catch up. Like, over the course of a start, you can probably catch on to the sinker. You can pick up on the slider. But in an inning, that sinker is overbearing for hitters. So I love how they're just, Eflin's our closer right now, and everybody else, Alvarado, Sir Anthony, Robertson, get us there. Get us to the ninth inning. So, I mean, absolutely unbelievable series. I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina, and probably Adam Wainwright. All three of them, Hall of Fame careers. They're just absolute beasts. Albert Pujols is one of the best players of all time, bar none. You know, Yadier Molina, one of the best defensive catchers, played so long, just the true Cardinal. Adam Wainwright, one of the best starters in their franchise's history. Him and Yadier Molina were the longest tenured battery of any crew in MLB history. And what I mean by that is they have the most starts, where Adam Wainwright was the pitcher and Yadier Molina was the catcher, of any duo in MLB history. So you got to give their flowers. You got to give your flowers to these guys when they earn it. And they totally earned it. They're arguably all three of them are going to be stepping away from the game this offseason. So I just want to give them their flowers. They earn it. But I am so happy we beat the Cardinals after what they did to the Phillies in 2011, pretty much ending that era of Phillies baseball. It was only poetic that it was the Cardinals who the Phillies played, and it was the Phillies who sent those guys off into the sunset. So kind of a little rose with some thorns on there, but I did want to give them some flowers for their careers. They've totally earned it, and that's what it was. But the Phillies do end up taking the series 2-0, and they will be moving on to face the Atlanta Braves in the National League Divisional Series. Speaking of the National League Divisional Series, that's where the Philadelphia Phillies find themselves, and they will be traveling on the road down to Atlanta for Game 1 against the Braves. An absolute crazy development. A lot of Phillies fans did not even think they would be here, let alone win a round. So we're going to have playoff baseball at CBP. We are going to have playoff baseball at Citizens Bank Park this year. I am so amped up. I'm going to Game 3. After they won Game 1 against the Cardinals, I said, we got to buy tickets now. I'm going with a couple friends and my fiance. We're going, and it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to get in that ballpark. I went to a World Series game in 2009. But I was also like 11 years old. I really wasn't as big a fan as I am now. I really didn't understand the significance of what it was. I just thought the Phillies were always good. We're always going to be nice. We're in the World Series every year. And I found out this last decade that is not the case. So I just can't wait to get back in the ballpark. It's going to be sold out. It's going to be crazy. All I'm saying is the Braves better win both their games in Atlanta, because the Phils are going to we're going to have Nola on the bump for Game 3. I don't know who's going to be on the bump for Game 4, so I'm a little bit nervous there, but I'll be there for Game 3. It's going to be crazy. Let's talk about the first two games, though, in the division series. Game 1 is going to be at 1 o'clock tomorrow on Tuesday, which is crazy. I work night shifts, so I'm kind of hyped that it's in the afternoon. A lot of people aren't super hyped. And then Game 2 on Wednesday is actually at 4:30, so should have a little bit more of a postseason feel with the weather. Hopefully, the darkness kind of... that early darkness kind of has a feeling of the postseason. So we'll see what happens there. But Game 1, it's going to be Max Fried versus Ranger Suarez in the pitching matchup. Obviously, the advantage tilts toward the Braves. They're going to have their ace on the bump. They're going to have all their hitters healthy, rested, ready to go. But Ranger Suarez is no pushover. He's not the guy you want starting Game 1. But when we came into the year, he looked like he could be in a mix for a Game 3 start. Eflin was in that mix too. And, Gibson was kind of in that mix, but he proved that he's not ready for that. And he might even be the Game 4 starter, so we'll see kind of how that works out. But it's going to be Ranger Suarez, a guy who limits hard contact, doesn't really allow very many home runs, fields his position at a Gold Glove caliber. And, it's going to be interesting to see. They don't have a ton of lefties in their lineup. They got Matt Olson. They got Michael Harris, who's probably going to win Rookie of the Year in the National League, both lefties. They got righty killers in Austin Riley, Ronald Acuna Jr., Dansby Swanson. They just got really, really good guys. They have Eddie Rosario, who's a lefty as well. He was the League Championship Series MVP last year for the Braves in the National League Championship Series. And let's not forget, these are the defending champs. Phil's obviously going into this series with house money. Ranger's going to be going to the bump. Game 2, it's going to be Kyle Wright, who led the league in wins this year at the pitcher position, versus Zach Wheeler. So that game is going to be crucial. Honestly, in Game 1, I think the Braves are going to win. I'm trying to be anti-biased here. Obviously, I think the Phils are going to go in and win 3 in a row, and we're going to go to the championship series against the Dodgers probably. But realistically, as I look back at this, I probably think the Braves take Game 1, and if the Phils can get Game 2, if they can sneak Game 2 away from Atlanta and come back to Philly and have a chance to win the series without taking a plane back to Atlanta, that would be absolutely crazy. Now, let's back it up a little bit and give a little bit more context. The Braves and the Phils have been going back and forth. Granted, the Braves have had their number. They have more wins than losses over the last couple seasons, especially this season. But the run differential hasn't been that crazy. The Phils have distributed a number of losses to the Braves this year. And these teams played a couple weeks ago, and the Phils split it 2-2. Granted, they could have won Game 3 as well. That one went to extra innings. But they split the series 2-2. So if you're telling me we got Zach Wheeler more than likely going in a Game 5, win or take all, it's a toss-up to me. And if you can do that against the defending world champions, who may even be a better team this year than they were last year, I just think that is... that's best case scenario for the Phillies. Worst case scenario, the bats don't travel. There's a little bit of a hangover. Wheeler and Nola give up an extra run or two than they're normally accustomed to, and the bats just can't get it back. But I choose to think that with the confidence the Phillies have right now, the confidence that they have in their rotation, the confidence that they have in each other in the lineup, that's the confidence they have in their bullpen, I think that is going to give them... call it what you maybe like an irrational confidence that they can go in there and they can beat the Braves. A lot of people aren't picking the Phils to win this series. A lot of people have picked the Braves to repeat. A lot of people have at least pegged the Braves and the Dodgers to be in the CS, the championship series in the National League. So it's going to be pretty crazy. There's not a confirmed starter for game three yet for the Braves. We're going to pitch Aaron Nola in the first game back in CBP, but they're waiting to see on Spencer Strider, who would have won Rookie of the Year in the National League had he not got hurt at the end of the regular season. So, sidebar on that. The Braves are just not fair. Let's just call it what it is. The Braves have Spencer Strider and Michael Harris, who are the two front runners for National League Rookie of the Year. They have the two guys who are runaway favorites for National League Rookie of the Year. And today they come out and they re-sign Spencer Strider, 6 years, $75 million. Unreal. They already have Austin Riley locked up. They have Ronald Acuna Jr. locked up. I haven't even talked about Ozzie Albies, second baseman, all-star second baseman. They have him locked up. They have Matt Olson locked up on a seven-year deal. They have Michael Harris, who they signed to a contract extension even though he's just a rookie, locked up. They have Max Fried locked up. Like, they have Kyle Wright locked up for a couple more years at least. Like, it is, they're one of the industry leaders and just cutting edge of how to run a baseball team, how to build a baseball team. Most of these guys are homegrown. They should still have Freddie Freeman if we're calling a buck, but they ended up getting Matt Olson in a trade to replace him. So that's just how you build a team. I got to give credit to Alex Anthopoulos. He has just been an absolute stud hire as a GM there. Regardless, let's bring it back to the division series now. Spencer Strider, if he is healthy, will more than likely go game three. If not, we are going to see former Philly and longtime journeyman Charlie Morton, who is still pumping as good as ever. He actually re-signed for another $20 million another year for next year. So he still got it. He still loved to play. He's still doing well. So it's going to be interesting to see there. But if we're talking about pitching matchups straight up, I mean, Ranger versus Freed, you probably give the edge to Freed. Then you got Wright versus Wheeler. I'm probably going to lean Wheeler. And then if it's Strider and Nola, that's pretty much a heads up to me. But if it's Morton and Nola, you're talking about the Phils having the pitching advantage in two of the three first games. So that's really what it's going to come down to. I'm praying that that swing by Bryce Harper, that home run that he had against Michaelis, really gets him out of his funk. Because I mentioned, and the broadcast kind of mentioned how it seemed like Bryce was in between. Tompkins kind of said that too. He seems in between. Like, he's late on the fastball, but he's early on the off speed. Like, he's just not really squaring anything up. He squared up a fastball for a single in that game too, and he took that curveball 430 to right field. So I'm hoping that he's starting to get into a little bit of rhythm more. And this series is really going to put the age-old debate, rest versus rust. Basically, a team that's been playing, this is like in basketball, if a team sweeps and then the other team goes seven games, it's like, well, this other team's had so much time, more time to rest, but this other team's been playing so much longer that they're in a rhythm. You know, rhythm versus rest, rhythm versus rust, whatever the case may be. It's really going to put it to the test because the Braves have been sitting around for like 10 days now, not really doing anything, and the Phils have gotten confidence-boosting wins. They've been on the road, they've been traveling, they've been used to this, so I just absolutely can't wait. These two games are going to be crucial. I think game two is the biggest game of the series. Obviously, beforehand, you're only guaranteed three games to play out of the best of five. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'll be there at game three. If you guys are there at game three, hit us up in the comments. Hit us up on social media. Let us know if you're there. But it's going to be crazy. So we got game one tomorrow at 1 o'clock. You bet we'll be tuning in. All right, let's just wrap up Wild Card Weekend with a couple other thoughts of mine before we close up the show today. Seattle Mariners are also, much like the Philadelphia Phillies, putting their postseason demons to rest. They went into Toronto and beat them they swept the Blue Jays as well in a crazy game two. Game one, I believe, was a 4-0 victory for the Mariners. And then it looked like we were going towards a game three on Sunday. The Blue Jays were up 8-1. And, you know, Adam Frazier hits a little single. They come around and score. Carlos Santana hits a three-run tank in that same inning, the next batter, and it's 8-5, and you're like, uh-oh, here it gets good. But you're still up 8-5 if you're a Blue Jays fan. It's the sixth inning. You know, there's still plenty of time, but you're still up three runs. And then bases get loaded. J.P. Crawford hits a little flare into center field. George Springer and Bo Bichette collide. It clears the bases. We're tied 8-8. And then the Mariners end up winning 10-9 in that decisive game two. So they're going to be absolutely going crazy. They're going to be playing the Astros, I believe. And then the Yankees are going to have the Guardians. So that's going to be an interesting series. I think the Yankees are going to roll the Guardians. But it's going to be the Mariners-Astros series. I can't wait. As a baseball fan, I can't wait to watch that series. There's going to be star power everywhere, fantastic pitching, and it's going to be great, great, great to see baseball. So we'll talk about those as those series wrap up too. In the National League, another great win for a Phillies fan. The Mets get eliminated in the wild card round. Bye-bye, Mets. Absolutely talking crap all year, thinking they're the hot stuff. Meanwhile, they haven't done anything in a decade, feels like, since they were in the World Series in 2015. And, you know, we're talking all this crap, like, this is our year, yada, 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 only to get bounced in the wild card round. Meanwhile, having three home games, mind you, against the San Diego Padres. So it was great to see that, just fantastic. So the Padres are going to go on and take on the Dodgers. So that's going to be a great series as well, too. That's kind of what we've been building toward this year. Once the Soto trade kind of happened, you kind of had a feeling the Dodgers and the Padres, while they were going for the NL West crown, were on a collision course for a postseason series. And I like how in the divisional round, we have two division matchups. Like, it would have been still been good if the Phils were playing the Dodgers and the Padres were playing the Braves. But in the divisional round, I'm happy that we have two division opponents going against each other in each series. So I think it's going to be great to see all four of these matchups. Honestly, the Yankees, I expect to sweep the Guardians. Maybe the Guardians steal one at home, but I anticipate that'll be a quick series. All the other series, I think, are going to be phenomenal. The Padres are going to give the Dodgers some work, but I think in the end, the Dodgers win that series. The Houston Mariners series, I'm kind of rooting for the Mariners, but I think the Astros just have too much. Their pitching is looking, I mean, honestly, the Mariners probably have better starting pitching if we're keeping it a buck. But the hitting, the depth of the lineup in Houston, I think is going to be just a little bit too much for the Mariners this year. Maybe next year we're talking about the Mariners of more of a legit contender. And then, like I mentioned, we already talked about the Phils Braves breakdown. So it was a crazy wild card weekend. I think a big success for the MLB to have so many of those games for this. This is the first year of the expanded wild card playoffs. So it was just great to see, and it was phenomenal, this setup that they decided to go with. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But overall, a lot of great games, and it makes it even better that the Phils are involved. So we're going to be definitely tuned in tomorrow for the Phils game. All right, everyone, that is going to do it for the show today. Once again, please hit that subscribe button if you're following us and watching us on YouTube. Check the description below for any of our social media handles. Also, feel free to shoot us questions. Any kind of questions you guys have, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball. We're going to have some more basketball coverage as the NBA starts to get picking up. We're going to have a pod out tomorrow talking more about week 5 in the NFL. So that's going to have some more questions about our football listeners. We're going to have a mailbag question as well on tomorrow's show. So definitely tune in to see that. Thank you guys again for joining in, and we can't wait to see you back here again next time.